Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Live Through Jesus podcast with Courtney Gilmore. On this episode, we're going to be talking about reverence and holiness. This is 2 Samuel 6 and 1 Chronicles 13, 15, and 16. When you think about God's commandments, most of the time we probably think about the Ten Commandments, and the ones that stand out to us are the ones that affect us, right? And so we think about lying, cheating, stealing, being mean to people, hurting others. These are things that we don't like when they're done to us, and we know it's wrong when we do it to other people. And we also like to see justice served whenever people treat other people badly. But we kind of forget sometimes about those first four commandments that all have to do with God, how we relate to God, how we treat Him. And probably that's because it's someone else and not us. You know, if it's another person here on this earth, we can think about how we would feel if that was done to us. But God is not visible to us, and He seems invincible. And so we don't think about the fact that there's rules about how we're supposed to treat Him. And honestly, a sin against God is way more important than a sin against another person. But because we don't see Him, maybe we don't think about that sometimes. And if someone gets punished for a sin against God, it looks harsh to us. We think that, yeah, they shouldn't have done that, but like, is it really that big of a deal? And it's like, yeah, everything against God is a bigger deal than anything against a person. And so today we're going to be talking about reverence and holiness. And these are things that we don't think about that much towards other people. We might think about respecting others, but we don't think about reverence, and we definitely don't treat other people as holy. But those are things that we need to think about when it regards the Lord. And so as we go through this story today, I want you to pay attention to who is being irreverent and who is not. And you might be surprised that people don't look at this in the same way as God does. That you may think someone is being irreverent or someone is doing the right thing, and God thinks the opposite. And so last week, if you'll remember, David was made the king of Israel. And the first thing that he did is take over the city of Jerusalem and build the city of David. And we're going to see this week that at some point after he's built the city, he decides, I think we should bring the ark here. And if you remember, it's been a little bit since we studied this, but back when Samuel was alive, his sons went to battle with the Philistines, and they brought the ark with them because they thought that if God was present with them, they couldn't lose the battle. But God was angry with them, and He did allow them to lose the battle, and Samuel's sons were killed, and the ark was captured by the Philistines. But there was a curse on every group of people wherever the ark was at that time. And the Philistines finally were like, this ark is cursing us. We want to get rid of it. And they sent it back to the Israelites. But they didn't treat it with the reverence that it required. And a bunch of them got killed right in the beginning when the ark got given back to them. And it scared everybody. And so they took it to a man's house in Kirjath-Jearim, and it stayed there. And it's been 20 years now. It's been in this guy's house. So the entire time that Saul was the king, the ark was not present with them. It was just in some guy's house being taken care of by his son. And so David's like, we should really bring the ark here. And he could have done that unilaterally because he was the king. But since he's a wise king, he thought it best not to make decisions totally by himself. And so he consulted the elders of Israel and said, hey, this is what I think that we should do. Do you also think that this is what God would want us to do? Should I go and get the ark and bring it here? Because, you know, we didn't have it with Saul. And that means that we weren't consulting God because his presence wasn't here with us. And I don't want it to be like that for me whenever I am now that I'm the king. And so do you think that we should bring it? And they were like, yes, we think that you should bring it here. And so it says he gathered all of the people, and it lists a town in the northeasternmost part of Israel, and then says from that northeastern town all the way to the southwesternmost part of Israel, which was the Nile River that separated Israel from Egypt. And so he gathered 30,000 men from all over Israel to go and get the ark. And he says, the ark of the Lord who dwells above the cherubim. And so if you remember when we studied the ark, it was basically a chest that had a lid, and they call that lid the mercy seat, because this is where God's spirit hovers between the two cherubim that are situated on each side with their wings hovering over the mercy seat. And they call it the mercy seat because this is where he grants mercy to the people. And so he says, we need to go get this ark, the ark of the Lord who dwells above the mercy seat, between the cherubim. And so they traveled the 10 miles into Judah and to the man's house who has the ark, and they load it on a brand new cart and begin to take it to Jerusalem. And it says somewhere along the way, one of the men whose name was Uzzah, the oxen stumbled. And he was afraid that the ark was going to fall out of the cart. And so he reached out to steady the ark so that it wouldn't fall down. And this made God angry, and he killed him. And the reason for this is because they were forbidden from touching the ark. It was holy, and they could not touch the holy things. And the thing is, they weren't supposed to carry the ark like this anyway. God created the ark specifically with rings on either side so that you could slide poles in it long ways and carry the poles on your shoulder. And if they would have done it this way, then it never would have had ability to fall out of the cart. And so God killed him for touching the ark. And it says, because of his irreverence. And then it says, this made David mad at God. He didn't like that God would kill him for doing such a thing. And maybe you feel like that too. I kind of felt like that when I first read this passage also. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier, is the person that God thinks is irreverent, we might not think that. And so we're going to talk about it further later, but I just want to recognize that David was angry at God, and you may have a tendency to feel that too. But David was also afraid. And so he decides, I'm not going to get the ark now. I'm just going to take it to another man's house and let it sit there because I'm too scared now to bring the ark to Jerusalem. And so they took it to Obed-Edom's house, and it stayed there, it says, for 3 months. But while it was there, God blessed that house because God's presence was there. And so where God's presence is, there is blessings. And so when David heard this, when David heard that Obed-Edom had been blessed, he decided, okay, we shouldn't have carried the ark that way. And it's, you know, not cursed or anything, and we're not going to be harmed by going and getting it. We just need to do it in the proper way. There was a way that God instructed us to do it, and I didn't pay attention to that. And so I'm just going to do it right this time. So beginning in 1 Chronicles 15, it tells us that this time he prepared much better. It says that he has a place now for the ark to go. He created a special tent for the ark to go in. And he also realized that it needed to be carried with the poles and not put on the cart, and that it was supposed to be carried by the Kohathites. The Kohathites were a clan of Levites. Levi was the third son of Jacob, who was renamed Israel. And the Levites were the ones that were designated to take care of the tabernacle and all of the holy things. It would be like today if we were to say they were in charge of ministry. They were the ones that were in charge of the church and all the things that happened there. And Levi had three sons, Kohath, Merari, and Gershom. And each one of them had their own jobs. And Kohath's job was to carry the holy things when they traveled with the tabernacle. And so David said, you know, I need to get four Kohathites to carry it. It needs to be carried on the poles. I need to have a place for it to go. And so he made all of these preparations. And so he gathered many of the Levites together, and he selected four who were Kohathites to carry the ark. But he didn't just get those four. He got several of the Levites together to go with him to get the ark. And so it says Uriel was the chief of the Kohathites, and he had 120 fellow clansmen with him. And Asaiah was the chief of Merari's tribe, and he had 220 with him. And then Joel was the chief of Gershom's tribe, and he had 130 people with him. And then he got three more chiefs who each had 280 and 112 with them. And so he's got six chiefs and several people with them of their clansmen. And then he also called Zadok and Abiathar, who were the priests. And Aaron was the high priest, the first priest that ever existed. He was Moses' brother, and he was from the Kohathite tribe. And when Aaron died, his son Eleazar became the high priest. And Zadok was from the lineage of Eleazar. And so he was the first one that David gathered to them. And then Abiathar was from the other son of Aaron, who was named Ithamar. And so we've got these two priests and six chiefs, and along with all of their clansmen. And then David created a music ministry. This is the first time that we've ever heard of this. And he told the Levites to appoint different men to lead different parts of worship or play different instruments. And one of the people that they got was Samuel's grandson, Heman. And then there was one other guy, Asaph, who was from that same clan. And then Ethan was from Merari's clan. And it says that he was in charge of 13 other of his clansmen. And so these three men were the ones that played the bronze cymbals. And then he had Alamoth, who led eight people on the harps. And then another man that led six others on the lyres. And another who directed the music. And then seven of the priests played the trumpet. And then he got Obed-Edom, who is the one whose house the ark is at right now, Jehiah, Barachiah, and Elkanah. And those were the four men who carried the ark. And he set out with these people, rejoicing on their way to Obed-Edom's house to get the ark. This is beginning in 1 Chronicles 16. And it says that after the men had gone six steps, they stopped and offered seven bulls and seven rams as a thanksgiving to God for basically keeping them safe. So they're like, we've gone this way. Apparently we're doing it right. God's not angry with us. Thank you so much, Lord. Here are some offerings for you. And David was clothed in a linen robe just like the rest of the Levites. He didn't dress in his royal garments. He was dressed just like everyone else, and they were on their way to get the ark. And when they finally brought the ark into the tent that David had prepared for them, they offered more burnt offerings and more peace offerings. Now, a burnt offering was totally burned up to God. No one could eat any portion of it. And then the peace offerings were shared between God, the priests, and the people. And so portions of it were burned and given totally to God. Portions went to the priest and portions went to the people. And it says David blessed the people and he offered them each a cake of bread, each a portion of the meat, and each a cake of raisins. And then he sang this song, this following song that we're going to read to God. And this song is made up of three separate psalms. The first one, Psalm 105, that's the first 15 verses, and it talks mostly about thanking God for everything that he's done for them. The next 13 verses are from Psalm 96, and they are mostly praising God for who he is. And then it ends with three verses from Psalm 106 that just celebrates God and kind of wraps everything up. And so we're going to go through this psalm. This is in 1 Chronicles chapter 16, beginning in verse 8. And it says, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord, call upon his name, make known his deeds among the people. Sing to him, sing praises to him, speak of all his wonders, glory in his holy name. Let the heart of those who seek the Lord be glad. Seek the Lord in his strength, seek his face continually. Remember his wonderful deeds, which he has done, his marvels, and the judgments from his mouth. O seed of Israel, his servant, son of Jacob, his chosen ones, he is the Lord our God. His judgments are in all the earth. Remember his covenant forever, the word which he commanded to 1,000 generations, the covenant which he made with Abraham, and his oath to Isaac. He also confirmed it to Jacob for a statute, to Israel as an everlasting covenant, saying, to you I give this land of Canaan as a portion of your inheritance. When there were only a few of you in number, very few, and strangers in it, and they wandered about from nation to nation, and from kingdom to another people, he permitted no man to oppress them, and he reproved kings for their sakes, saying, do not touch my anointed ones, and do my prophets no harm." So because the ark is now there with them, and it hasn't been there with them before this time, he's telling the people, call on God, seek him continuously. He's here, right here in our presence. You can talk to him and seek after him any time. And then he urges the people, remember everything God's done for you. Remember the miracles. Remember his teachings. He promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that he would give us this land, and he did. There were only 70 people whenever they went to Egypt, and God protected them and kept them safe from everybody at that time, and then ended up bringing us into the land that we're now standing on. Praise him for this. Look how faithful he's been to fulfill his promise. And then it goes into, we'll keep reading in verse 23, and it says, "Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Proclaim good tidings of his salvation from day to day. Tell of his glory among the nations." Don't just tell each other about all the things that God has done. Tell the other nations. So the Jews are not God's chosen people because he only chooses them. He chose them as his representatives to all the rest of the nations so that everyone would know about his miracles and the way that he's worked for Israel, and it would draw them to him. And so he says, praise him and tell everyone. Verse 25, "For great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. He also is to be feared above all the gods. For all the gods of the people are idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him. Strength and joy are in his place. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of the people. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due to his name. Bring an offering and come before him. Worship the Lord in his holy array. Tremble before him in all the earth. Indeed, the world is firmly established. It won't be moved. Let the heavens be glad, and let the earth rejoice, and let them say among the nations, "The Lord reigns." Let the sea roar and all it contains. Let the field exult and all that is in it. Then the trees of the forest will sing for joy before the Lord, and he is coming to judge the earth. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his loving kindness is everlasting. So that last verse was from Psalm 106, but the previous verses from 96 says that we should tell all the nations because their gods are worthless. So they need to know about our God who has done all of these mighty things. He's the creator of heaven and earth, and in his presence we will find splendor and majesty, strength and joy. He deserves worship and fear because of who he is. David's the earthly king, but God is the king of heaven and earth, even the king of the sea and the fields and the trees. He is good and his love is everlasting. And then it ends in verses 35 and 36 by saying, "Then say, save us, O God of our salvation, and gather and deliver us from the nations to give thanks to thy holy name and glory in thy praise. Blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, from everlasting even to everlasting." Then all the people said, "Amen," and praise the Lord. So he asks God to save them, gather them, separate them from the other nations, protect them, make them one unified nation, and they would thank him and praise his holy name. He asked them God to bless them, and said that he blessed him in return. He praised him and knew that he was holy. And then when the celebration was over, he left Asaph and his brothers to tend the ark, and he selected Obed-Edom and Hoseth to stay there as its caretakers, along with 68 other of his clansmen. And then he told Zadok, the priest, to go back to the tabernacle, which was in Gibeah, and give the regular sacrifices in the tabernacle and do all of the things that the priests are supposed to do there. And Haman, remember, Samuel's grandson, along with Jeduthun, they were to play the trumpets and the cymbals and be in charge of the music ministry there. And Jeduthun's sons took care of the gate. And so to see what happened when the celebration was over, we're going to move over to 2 Samuel 6 because it only talks about this in one verse in 1 Chronicles 16, but it's several verses here in 2 Samuel 6. And we're going to begin reading in verse 14. And it says, "David was dancing before the Lord and with all of his might, and David was wearing a linen ephod. And so David and all of his house of Israel were bringing up the ark of the Lord and shouting and the sound of a trumpet. And then it happened as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David that Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked out the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart." So they brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. That's what we already talked about. And when David finished offering the burnt offerings and the peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts. Further, he distributed to the people, the multitude of Israel, both the men and women, a cake of bread, one of dates and raisins. And then all of the people departed to their own houses. But when David returned to bless his household, Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David, and she said, "How the king of Israel distinguished himself today. He uncovered himself today in the eyes of his servants' maids as one of the foolish ones who shamelessly uncovers himself." So she thought that he was dancing around like a fool is basically what she was saying in front of all these ladies, just acting like some common man. You know, he doesn't have his royal clothes on. He's acting like this regular guy. And the word for dancing is actually twirling. And so she's like, you're jumping around and twirling around like a complete idiot. And you just disgraced yourself. And she's totally embarrassed. But David says to her, it was before the Lord that I danced like this. And the Lord chose me over your father and above his house to appoint me as ruler over the people of the Lord, over Israel. Therefore, I will celebrate the Lord. And it seems like he's saying, you think this is disgraceful because this isn't how your dad acted as king. But God chose me over your dad, so he's not the standard. I didn't do anything wrong. I wasn't dancing like a fool in front of these ladies. I was dancing for God, celebrating his presence in our camp now. And so I didn't do anything wrong. And then in verse 22, he says, I will be more lightly esteemed than this and will be humbled in my own eyes. But with the maids to whom that you have spoken, to them I am distinguished. So what he's saying is, you know, when he says in my own eyes, he's saying in my own home, like by my own wife, you think that I'm acting in an unbecoming way. But these women, the ones that actually, you know, came down from their little tower and celebrated with me, they think what I did is honorable. You didn't even come down to celebrate because you're apparently too good. You know, you're the queen, and so not important enough for you to come down and mingle with the common people. But I wasn't mingling with the common people. I was celebrating God's presence in this camp, and those ladies were doing it with me because they understood the importance of what is going on, and they think what I did is honorable. And then it ends by saying that Michal, the daughter of Saul, never had any children. And we don't know if this is because God punished her for what she did, or if it is because David didn't sleep with her anymore because he's upset with her. But either way, this is very significant because she never has an heir to the throne. All the rest of his wives have an heir to the throne, and she does not. And it's even further significant that she specifically is the one that doesn't have an heir to the throne because she's Saul's daughter. And you know, all of Saul's sons have been killed. The only son that is the only descendant of Saul left alive right now is his crippled son, Mephibosheth, who was Jonathan's son that got dropped by the nurse during the battle and fell down and was crippled. But that makes him disqualified for the throne, and God's chosen David anyway. But if Michal had a son, then Saul wouldn't have an heir to the throne through his sons, but he would have one through his grandsons. But because she doesn't have any children, then Saul's line is completely dead. They're done. He's not having any more people ascend to the throne. And so what I want to talk about today is, why did God consider Uzzah's actions irreverent and David wasn't irreverent? You know, that's what Michal thought about him. She thought he was acting in an embarrassing manner. And Uzzah is just trying to protect the ark because it's holy, probably, right? And so why would God be mad at him for that? So mad that he would kill him. Maybe we tend to agree with David, as I said before, and we're kind of mad at God. We're like, why would you kill him? And then maybe we agree with Michal and we're like, yeah, you were looking like a fool out there. You know, you should be a little more reserved. You're the king, for goodness sakes. And so how can we get it so wrong? How can we be so backward from what God thinks? And I think some of it is because we really don't understand reverence and holiness. Like I said, we don't consider the sins against God maybe even as important or serious as the sins against people, whereas they should be much, much more serious. But also, we kind of just look at this like God is, you know, flown into an impulsive fit of rage or something, but that's not the case. God specifically told them, first of all, not to carry the ark like this, and second of all, that if they touched the holy things, they would die. He said that. He said, if you touch any of the holy things, you will die. And so this isn't an impulsive fit of rage on God's part. This is the natural consequences of what he would do, regardless of why Uzzah thinks it's right. It's just like us touching a hot stove. You know, you can say that there's a million reasons why you would possibly do that. But if you touch a hot stove, you're going to get burned every time, you know. And so this is just the natural consequence. Because it's holy, they're not supposed to touch it. And holy literally means like set apart, completely separate from you. Because God is great and you are common. You know, Michal thought that David was too great to mingle with the common people. But we're all the common people. God is the one that's holy. He's the one that's separate from us. And we are too common to touch anything that is holy and glorious like the ark was. And sometimes because we just don't think about it, God needs to impose harsh consequences on us so that we will remember, hey, we're supposed to revere him. He is holy. So maybe for us to understand this just a little bit better, think for a minute if we could see God hovering over the mercy seat. If he was the king sitting in the cart being paraded through the streets, would you just casually walk up to him like he's just any common man and just start talking to him? Would you touch the cart that he's being carried on, the king? No. We would approach the king with some trepidation, if at all, right? We would give him the most possible respect as we could. And so if that's how we would treat an earthly king, then why don't we treat God with even more reverence, right? We know that he should be treated with more reverence. So then you might be thinking, okay, fine. I get it. I understand why this happened to Uzzah. He wasn't supposed to touch the ark. He touched it. Doesn't matter that he thinks that he is doing the right thing. That is something that we all need to realize, is that, you know, Uzzah thought he was doing the right thing, but God had a specific command against it. And so we can't decide in our own minds, oh, I think that this sounds like the right thing for me to do. But God specifically said you can't touch it. And so we can't decide in our minds that we think that this is okay, God would be fine with it, when he specifically told us not to. So, okay, we get that. But then what about David? He wasn't acting with trepidation. He wasn't being reverent, it doesn't look like. You know, he's not solemn and serious. He's dancing around like a fool. And so why is it that he's not being irreverent? Well, again, let's think about the king being paraded down the street. He's not approaching the king. He's not touching the king. He's standing on the street celebrating the fact that the king is coming to his town. And if you were standing on the sidelines as the king was being paraded through the town, you might throw all caution to the wind and yell out something. You might say, I'm so glad you're here, or you're doing such a great job, or thanks for coming, right? And not think about what everybody else is thinking. You might just be so excited that you don't hold anything back, right? That's all David was doing. He was so excited that he wasn't holding anything back. And so to Michal, he looked like he was embarrassing himself. You know, he was not being reserved enough. And maybe not being reverent enough to God coming into his town. But the king would not think that you were bad if he was being paraded through your town and you were celebrating. He would be glad. And so that's all David was, is just excited. So this whole story was written down as an example for us. It was an example to them then. A warning. Uzzah was a warning and David was an example. And it's the same thing for us today. God is above us, way too holy for us to approach without a sacrifice. and too glorious for us to even look on with our normal eyes. In Exodus 33, Moses is talking to God, and he says, "Please show me your glory." And in verse 19, God says, "I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before you, and I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will be compassionate on whom I will have compassion. But you can't see my face, for any man that sees my face will not live. Here is a place by me, and you shall go, and you shall stand on the cleft of the rock, and my glory will pass by you, but I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand when I pass by. And then I'll take my hand away, and you will see my back, but you can't see my face." That's how glorious God is. And the ark was not supposed to be approached by anyone other than the high priest, only with a sacrifice. It stayed when it wasn't traveling. The ark was supposed to be behind a curtain in the tabernacle in the holiest of holies, or the most holy place. And it's because God's presence was there. And the only way you could approach God is if you had a sacrifice in hand. But for us today, that doesn't mean that God's not approachable or that we should avoid him. We just have to put him in his proper place, not forget who he is and who we are in comparison to him. He is the creator of heaven and earth, and we are the ones he created. He's sinless, and we're sinful. And that sin separates us from him, and the only thing that can bridge that gap is Jesus. It's because of his sacrifice that now we can approach God. Just like those priests could approach God with a sacrifice, we can approach God with Jesus as our sacrifice. Hebrews 4:13-16 says, "There's no creature hidden from his sight, but all things are open and laid bare to the eyes of him whom we must answer. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who's passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let's hold firmly to our confession. For we do not have a high priest that can't sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in all things, just as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us approach the throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace for help at the time of our need." And then in Hebrews 10:19-23, it says, "Brothers and sisters, since we have this confidence to enter the holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way, which he inaugurated for us through the veil, that is his flesh." The veil is the curtain that I was telling you about that the ark sat behind. Jesus went through that veil by dying on the cross in his flesh. And since we have such a great high priest over the house of God, let's approach God with a sincere heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed pure with water. We've been sprinkled by the blood of Jesus, and that's how we can enter into God's presence. So he says, "Hold firm to the confession of your hope without wavering, because the one that promised is faithful." And so, because of this, we don't have to be reserved in our worship or quiet about who God is. Instead, we need to be like David, praising and celebrating God's presence in our lives with reckless abandon, completely unconcerned about what people think about us, and focus completely on what they think about God. If we are excited about God, if we are thankful for all that he's done in our lives, if we are displaying that to other people, you know, that might look foolish to some people, but to others, it's going to bring them to him. And that's all that matters. It matters that God sees that we're celebrating him, that we love him, that we're thankful for him, that we're praising him, that we're living a life glorifying to him. And it matters to him that we are showing him to other people, just like the song said, "Tell all the nations." And so I hope that gives you a little bit better understanding of what reverence and holiness looks like. and maybe a little more boldness about approaching God, but doing it in the appropriate way, in the way that says, I know who you are. You are way above me. You are holy, but Jesus is my sacrifice, and I'm so thankful that He died for me, and you are my Father, you are my Lord, and I'm so grateful to have you in my life. So that's all I have for today. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. If you'd like this lesson in written form, then go to livethroughjesus.substack.com. And you can become a paid subscriber there and get all the lessons emailed to you each week for $6 a month or $60 a year. You'll also get access to all the previous lessons that are there. Some people like to have the written lessons because the scriptures are all linked and you can just click on those and then you can go a little deeper in your study. I also have a few more scriptures in the written study that I don't have time to read here. And then also, if you'd like to do it with a Bible study group, it's a cheap way to do it because you can just get one subscription and then just print all your materials off and everybody doesn't have to buy a book. But if you don't want to pay, then still go to livethroughjesus.substack.com and become a free subscriber because I also send out a blog post with each one of these lessons that doesn't teach the lesson but just talks about something that we can learn from each lesson. And I also teach that on a separate YouTube and podcast channel, Live Through Jesus Weekly Devotions, and it's a much shorter podcast than this one and just tells you kind of what you can learn like a little devotion for the week. And so go become a free subscriber over there at Substack or subscribe to the Live Through Jesus Weekly Devotions channel so you can get those. And then join me on social media at Live Through Jesus, and I'll be posting some scriptures and clips from this episode. And then I'll see you back next week. Thanks and have a good day.